Hello everyone, welcome back to just another F1 podcast here on the Apex Motorsport. My name is Richard Smith and this is season 4, episode 17, and we've just had the Singapore Grand Prix at the Marina Bay Circuit. And joining me to discuss this one is firstly Ryan Caldwell. Ryan, post summer break, F1 races have seemed to pick up a bit. Do you think that is the same this weekend?
Oh, 100%. I think this is arguably, especially near the end of the race, the middle of the race, start of the race, it's definitely another competitor for one of the best races of the season, yet again. For once, we didn't have... get ahead of myself, but I'll just say, for once, things were a little different.
Yeah, well, to be fair, if you're listening to this podcast and don't yet know the result, I would recommend watching the race and coming back to this podcast, because we will spoil it within the next 60 seconds or so, if not before that. But also joining me and Ryan for this one is Tom Tosin. Tom, you were quite entertained by this race. Your messaging afterwards, you seemed to enjoy it. What do you think has happened to make these races from before the summer break being quite dull and boring, and we were getting a bit fed up with Formula One, to come back and be in this absolute, pool of craziness that is high entertainment?
I think it's a mixture of great strategic calls and new upgrades from the rest of the teams that aren't Red Bull. It's just been absolutely fantastic. I think some of the driving we've seen has been just inch perfect and masterful. Like, as we saw in Monza, the fight between the two Ferraris was inch by inch, and they were just so close the whole time, and that was fantastic. But this time we had just a masterful drive from Carlos Sainz, letting Lando Norris get the slipstream, stopping the Mercs from overtaking him behind, and then just the drama at the end with George Russell going off. It's really just after the summer break come alive. And then also the weather, that's been a big thing that's added to the racing.
Yeah, and obviously the big talking point coming out of Singapore is that the streak is over. Tom, you'll get the reference, but it feels a little bit like when The Undertaker finally lost at WrestleMania. It's over. The Max Verstappen winning streak, 10 in a row, 10 and out. Carlos Sainz, of course, was the driver that finally broke it. And not only is it the Verstappen streak over, but it's the Red Bull streak as well. They've won every race this season. There's probably part of them that are a little bit disheartened that they haven't been able to win every race this year, which I think if they have won this one, they might have actually went on to do, because this was the one track that was often pinned as, if there's one race that they weren't going to win, it's going to be here. And I think they said after the race to the other teams, we'll let them have one. Ryan, just your thoughts on that. Obviously Sainz taking victory, but for Red Bull, it was always going to be a case, wasn't it, that if they weren't going to win a race, it was going to take something quite dramatic and a really bad weekend for them. And as much as it appears, feels like they had a really bad weekend, it wasn't the worst result for them, given that they're still obviously miles ahead in the Constructors' Championship. They could have actually won it in Singapore if they got a 1-2 and Mercedes didn't score or something like that. But do you think Red Bull will be quite disheartened that this streak's over, or do you think it's going to be they'll just win next week in Japan, all will be okay again?
Sure, as with everything, when Mercedes was winning, it was just constant, but there was even battles towards the front of the grid with competition from Red Bull. Now Red Bull's been at the top, and it's now their turn to have someone compete against them. So this time it's the Ferraris, which, if you'd have said at the start of the season the Ferrari's going to come through midway after the summer break and just start to actually do good, I would have said, haha, you're funny, wait till next year and it'll be the same again. But no, Ferrari have made some slow gains over the summer break, from whatever aero packages or performance packages they've brought in to these two races, and things are just starting to work well for them. As for Red Bull, obviously they're gonna be disheartened. I'm sure, you know, if you were winning all the time and then you've this big massive slump, like it's not even like he wasn't even on the podium. What, Max finished fifth and then you had Checo finishing in eighth? Like, you're still in the points, you still got points for that weekend, but when you're used to being on that podium every weekend, well, maybe not so much for Sergio, but everyone else, you know, for Max, I'm sure he's feeling a wee bit lost. He's like, well, what do I do after a race now? Where do I go? Do I still go to the weigh station? I want to go upstairs. I want to go chat to my other two podium sitters. So Max is probably lost. The team had nothing probably to post on social media because there was no victories. So I'd say everyone was a wee bit lost for a while. But I'm just glad someone else finally won. We were saying in the podcast, joking about it, oh, we'll give up after, you know, Japan, because then that's the cutoff point, yada yada. But I guess now that's going on for another race. We can still use Max to win. As for the rest of the grid, everything pretty much fell quite well. You know, you had the Mercedes, the McLarens, even had an Alpine up there. You know, everything was actually, without the Red Bull up top, this race was almost how you would call your idealistic scenario within Formula One, where all the teams are quite close together. Like, you look at that last battle, the battle for first, there was like four cars going at it, flat, all within, what, a second and a half of each other, all almost on DRS trains. To be honest, it was probably one of the best races so far, if not the one of the better ones. But it was good.
Yeah, it definitely was a very good race, and your point there about the four cars at the end, that's what we want to see in Formula One. And, you know, to be fair, we've had some of this for second and third place throughout the season, but because it was obviously for a race win, it just added so much more hype and so much more tension to it. You know, obviously with, you know, Carlos Sainz, we'll touch on him in a little bit, but, you know, doing some great strategy out front, controlling the race. Obviously, you know, pushing the likes of Lando back into the pack. But, you know, with him out front, we had Norris, who, you know, it's still a little bit weird seeing Lando Norris being able to fight for a race win in a McLaren, given how they were at the beginning of the season. It's the biggest success story of the year for me, to see the turnaround for McLaren. And then obviously you had the two Mercedes drivers battling each other, and we had sort of everything we wanted to see. We had, you know, Mercedes, you know, I think for the first time in a long time, they really were at, you know, people were questioning, who's their number one driver here? Are they actually going to do team orders? Because Russell was struggling, Hamilton looked to be a lot more comfortable, and, you know, were they going to make that call of for Russell to let Hamilton free, which wouldn't have gone down well. So yeah, there's so much to unpack in that, but definitely a great battle. And Tom, just I want to get your thoughts on that, the end of the race, that battle. And but I'm just looking at Verstappen's recent record, because I was curious the last time he didn't finish on the podium, and the last time he didn't finish on the podium was Sao Paulo last season. He finished sixth, which is, you know, which is quite crazy. And, you know, before that it was Singapore last season, and then Silverstone last year. The last time he didn't finish a race was Australia 2022. So it's a scary streak that he's been on. Obviously this season, this is his worst performance of the season, and I think for any driver, and Tom, I'll ask you this, for any driver, a fifth place finish would, you know, would be a decent weekend, but for Verstappen, this is an absolute disaster of a weekend for him.
Yeah, but I don't feel like that's what necessarily Red Bull will be focusing on. They've still scored like pretty decent points there. It's a good amount, and so with that being said, and it's like what the Sky have been saying, it's just, it depends how they go on to the next round in Japan. If they're still struggling with the pace as much as they have been this weekend, then yeah, that is a pretty issue. But a top five finish is really not bad at all. He still drove to the best of his abilities, with, from what I remember from the race, not too many, or if any, mistakes. And Perez kind of showed that he had a bad day with the car and just with his own driving standards. So I feel like it's not the most successful weekend for Verstappen, but it could have gone a lot worse. So I feel like it's a lot more of a damage recovery situation that's ended quite well to not have gone worse.
I'm just also having a look here at the permutations for Japan when it comes to the Constructors' Championship. And for Red Bull to win the Constructors' title in Japan, they just need to outscore Mercedes by 1 point. They Ferrari also have to outscore them by 24 points or more, but the last time they done that was in Bahrain in 2022. So, yeah, basically they just have to get one more point than what Mercedes do, which, quite frankly, with a race win, that should be enough, really.
Yeah, unless Perez double is up retirement.
So, Ryan, do you think the Constructors' Championship pretty much sewn up at... Well, it would be a good place for them to do it again, given not officially power behind it.
Yeah, it's pretty much wrapped up, I'd say, at this stage. We were all sort of expecting it to be wrapped up at this stage anyway, depending on how this race went. They still gathered a decent enough amount of points. So realistically, done and dusted, hands, you know, that sort of motion. Yeah, they're set to win it. I can't see Mercedes doing anything spectacular. I can't see Ferrari doing anything spectacular. I think we go back to same old copy and paste for the Japanese Grand Prix. As well as that, almost like the home race, even because, you know, Red Bull, Honda at the time, but is it not like Ford powertrain soon? So, like, are they... still with Honda talking or not? It's hard to tell, but still it's a good race too in Japan. The trophies are nice too, which is a good thing as well. So that should be wrapped up in no time, I'd say. Yeah,
everything's nice apart from the 6 o'clock start for the UK fans. I'm also looking here that Lewis Hamilton, Fernando Alonso are the only drivers currently still in the title battle, alongside Perez, obviously. Basically, both Hamilton and Alonso are going to be out of the title battle if Verstappen now scores them by 15 and 25 points, respectively, in Japan. So, they might still be, and because obviously Verstappen cannot win the title now in Japan. It goes on to Qatar. That's like five or six races before the end of the year, and obviously Qatar being a sprint race means he could wrap it up, I think, on the Saturday, which, let's hope for Verstappen's sake he actually gets told when he becomes a champion this year and not be left to, was it David Coulthard last year had to tell him, or it was Johnny Herbert that had to tell him last season. Tom, let's talk about Carlos Sainz. For me, that was one of the best race winning performances, purely because we know what Ferrari's like in terms of their strategy, and it's not often the best. And we've often seen mainly Leclerc coming on the radio and basically telling the team what he wants to do. We seen Sainz basically, we didn't hear much from Sainz. He sort of did his own thing, and I think there was a point where we were all getting a little bit concerned whenever we seen Norris, you know, for Sainz's sake, when we seen Norris closing that gap, and then we heard that Sainz basically did it on purpose to try and back him up into to defend against the two Mercedes by keeping Norris up there, because he knew that his battle wasn't with Norris. In fact, it was with Russell and Hamilton behind. But do you agree with that? That was a wonderful display from Sainz out front.
It was super masterful driving, to be fair, because he knew Lando wasn't a threat, because as they discussed the whole race, you had to be 2 seconds faster a lap to get past the car in front. So he knew both Mercedes, what they were like rocket ships after that. They swapped to the mediums, absolutely closing the gap by seconds a lap. So by using Norris just as like some sort of shield from the Mercedes, it was just, it was fantastic. And it was just so smart because it was kind of, maybe Ferrari, it was a tough strategy call because it was either track position or the new tyres. And at one stage, it did look like Ferrari had made the wrong call with track position. But just through his intelligence as a driver to use Lando is, I think, why Ferrari should probably go with him as their championship driver. He should be the one they prioritise with the championship maybe next year. Because Leclerc has pace, but he lacks consistency, as we saw when he kind of went up against Verstappen last year. Most of the time it was Ferrari messing him up in the battle, but there were occasions where he just couldn't handle the pressure. I think Sainz is a much more sensible, and as he's shown this weekend, a theoretical driver. So if you go with him for a championship and maybe not even have the best car, I feel like he can really give you a great opportunity at bringing a championship to Ferrari, because I think it's the smartest drive we've probably seen in ages, because it was obvious he didn't have the car to win that race. But for using kind of just race strategy, he just used it to perfection.
Yeah, it definitely was. And it's an interesting point you make there about Sainz basically being the Ferrari number one, effectively going for that title, because the hopes of Ferrari for years have been pinned on Leclerc. They have been since he was at Sauber. And a lot of people, including myself, said that, you know, Leclerc is good enough to be a world champion. And I still think he is, but he is missing one or two things, you know, about that consistency, and there's just something that doesn't quite feel right at the moment about Leclerc that it just doesn't feel right. And I just hope it doesn't get to the point where he isn't enjoying his time at Ferrari at all and is looking to leave, because he's a talented driver. And I feel like if Ferrari made them right strategy calls the past two or three seasons, he could have been right in that title mix. Ryan, just your thoughts on that. Do you think Ferrari should look at Sainz as their future number one, or if not now? Or do you think that, you know, once Leclerc irons out these few issues, he's still clearly the better driver?
Well, for Ferrari's sake, I would prioritise the driver who's given them the best results so far at the minute. Sainz wasn't showing any great potential at the start of the season, but now he's absolutely flying. He's comfortable with the car. He's dialed in. He's set up. He's raring to go. He knows there's a fight in the car now, so why sit back and let Charles have all the glory? Take the fight. Push hard. Get those pole positions, get those race wins, or at least podium spots. You know, if he keeps fighting hard, Charles is just gonna stay in the shadow. He's gonna be the Valtteri Bottas to the Lewis Hamilton. You know, that's what Sainz wants. He didn't leave McLaren as the head driver to go to Ferrari and not fight for his chance to be, quote unquote, the main driver. Even though Ferrari say we have no favorites, we are an equal team. Blah blah blah. Yeah, same as Red Bull, they're an equal team. Max. But no. But Charles, he's definitely up there. It's just at the minute he's just not got that edge over Carlos, which it's a good thing. Obviously we can't forget, you know, the two of them were going neck and neck at each other there not so long ago. But in the grand scheme of things, Charles has always been the wonder kid. He came up from, Alfa Romeo, yes? Yeah. He came up from Alfa Romeo, came in, was the wonder kid that basically destroyed Sebastian Vettel's career at Ferrari. So that's why they've seen him as their wonder kid for so long. But now Sainz has come in, and the team's evenly balanced. They have a new team director, I suppose you would put it, or the team boss. Fred Vasseur, Alfa Romeo old boss, so I suppose there could still be a wee bit of favouritism there towards Charles, seeing as he technically would have been his protégé. So yeah, it's definitely an interesting talking point to think about. But at the same time, as I said, you have to go with what's winning, and Sainz is the one who's delivering the goods at the minute. So they just have to stick with what they've got.
The thing is, as well, I feel like Sainz may have. I don't think he's had the speed over the last 2 years because he had a kind of a major confidence knock at the start of the 2022 season. If you go back and remember, he had a lot of retirements, kind of from. I think from what I remember, a lot of self mistakes.
Spin, exactly.
So with the like last 2 weekends, I feel like we're seeing just kind of prime confidence filled Carlos Sainz, and that's what we kind of saw in his first season and multiple seasons at McLaren. So I feel like he's more the championship driver, because if we go back to the first year they were teammates in 2021, when they weren't in as competitive cars, Carlos did finish higher in the championship, if I remember correctly. And that was just, I think Leclerc probably got better results for the team, but Carlos is just so, so consistent. And I feel like that's what they need. They need a consistent driver. And I don't think Leclerc's proven he is a consistent driver. He shows he has pace, but there's a lot of drivers with pace. Like, Donardo, he had a lot of pace, but he couldn't finish the race. I know this is extreme, but I think Grosjean this year in IndyCar, I think some weekends he's had a lot of pace, but he's just not been able to not make a mistake that's cost him the race. So I feel like with Sainz, if you've got someone as fast as Sainz is at the moment and has proven consistency wherever he goes with where he finishes his races, I feel like you've just got to pin your championship hopes on him, because he's just, I think at the moment, he's just such a talented driver.
I just get a feeling, you know, Günther Steiner's sitting there going, we have the same engines, why can't we go fast like them? You know, it's bad for Haas, man. They were looking so good. Well, I suppose Kevin got a point. That's not too bad.
I think for me, the big thing about Sainz is it's a proper redemption story, because you know, if you think back to end of 2017, 2018, when he was sent out on loan to Renault, it was pretty much, you know, career over. Red Bull don't want you anymore. We're sending you out on loan as part of the agreement with Toro Rosso to change engines and all of this. And you know, it wasn't doing great at all. His results weren't great. They were improving as the season went on, in fairness, but obviously it was pairing Nico Hülkenberg, which it's not the worst team in the world pairing at the time, but obviously then, as you said, he went to McLaren, and I think having a teammate the likes of Lando Norris beside him, obviously Sainz, I think, initially had to become that team leader to help Norris develop Norris, and I think there's part of me thinking that a lot of what Norris is showing at the moment is partly down to Sainz basically setting a good example for him, because I think Sainz, he's proven he's a very underrated driver, and you know, if Ferrari could have the pick of the drivers in the grid, would they pick Sainz? Probably not. Would they even pick Leclerc? I have my doubts. They would obviously probably go for Verstappen and, you know, maybe Norris or Russell or something like that. Whenever someone says Carlos Sainz to me, it's only really recently that Ferrari and Sainz have come into my head. Beforehand, I've always felt he's like a, you know, midfield driver, and he's not really championship worthy. But these past few races, he looks to me like a proper race winner, and I'm glad that he's got, you know, there's only a second Grand Prix victory as well, which is quite crazy, and I think as a testament to how sort of well he's done in recent races, that despite this being only second victory, it doesn't come as a surprise, and he looked very comfortable, and that's the main thing. If you're gonna win, do it with ease and do it in style, and that's exactly what he done. We touched there on Leclerc, you know, his rise in Ferrari, and you know, coming in and destroying the career of Sebastian Vettel in a way. But you know, if you go to the team who Ferrari really fighting against in the Constructors' Championship, Mercedes, obviously Hamilton has been Mercedes' main driver for a number of years. Russell came in, and there was meant to be this transition period where Russell would become the team leader and, you know, sail off in the distance, winning multiple championships while Hamilton lived in Monaco or somewhere fancy with millions of pounds in a pension scheme. But that's not been the case. Hamilton has outperformed Russell since he joined, although Russell technically did finish higher. Ryan, I'll start with you in this one. George Russell versus Hamilton this week. It was the first, well, we've seen them battle in the past, but this felt like the first real time we got a proper battle that was ultimately maybe for a race win. You know, they both had the pace, but I personally think if Russell had let Hamilton pass, Hamilton could have really been fighting for that one. I think Russell slowed both of them down, and obviously Russell made that what he called himself as a rookie error, you know, hitting the wall. Just what's your thoughts on that? Do you think that maybe Russell's feeling the pressure of not being able to beat Hamilton, or do you think that's totally irrelevant and it was simply just, it was an error that, you know, given how high tensions were down the race, adrenaline was pumping, and he just, a lapse of concentration, or, you know, he looked elsewhere and next thing you know, he's on the wall on the end of the race?
I don't even think that. If I'm going to side with him a wee bit. When you look at that wall, if it was a perfectly straight wall, he still would have finished the race. But do you notice how, like, I think maybe when Lando caught it, maybe, I don't know if it was a solid wall or if it was like a flexi wall or whatever it was. Like, I wasn't really paying much attention. But do you notice that he's straight alongside it, and then he hits the wall. It's not like he drove into the wall. He was alongside it. It's as if he just didn't turn early enough to avoid the edge of it, and he just sort of, boom, straight into it. That's from what I seen. But apart from that, the whole weekend, the two of them were just flat out at each other. Like, you know, constantly improving. You know, George managed to qualify in P2, Hamilton P5. Literally not much between them at all. And obviously, they were sitting, what, third and fourth then, come the end of the race. They picked up together as a team unbelievably well. The strategy worked well for them. I'll give them that as well with Mercedes. They played a wee bit of a bold move with the double stack in the middle of a race. It paid off. They came back strong. Just that one mistake, it just messed the whole thing up. I do think, yeah, maybe not so much, but if he had have let Hamilton pass, I think Hamilton possibly would have just sandbagged and just kept third. I don't think he would have tried Norris as hard as he did, because he would have been thinking, no, I want a podium. I definitely want a podium. I don't want to risk, you know, taking both of us out and stuff like that, just to keep his confidence sort of there. Whereas George, he's hungry. He wants to prove he can beat Hamilton. He wants to show that I am just as good, or if not better, than my teammates. You know, stop comparing me as the second driver. Like, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the Valtteri to Lewis Hamilton. He doesn't want to be called that, so he's doing all he can. Yes, pressure and high tensions, adrenaline's going flat out in that sort of a situation, especially in the fact, you know, they were all within a few tenths of each other throughout the whole last lap before George bended it or caught it on the wall. But there wasn't much he could do at that point, you know. Overall, Mercedes, solid weekend until the incident. The two drivers were pretty much on a knife edge that whole time in those last 5-6 laps, just trying to catch back as quick as they could. Could they have won? I don't think so, not really. I don't even think George really had a chance of getting past Carlos, if I'm honest with you, within that extra lap. No way. They might have got Lando. Lando was defending, like, I don't know how you would put it. Better than Maguire, anyway. It was just a really good race. I don't know what else to say. It was just good. It was just awesome.
Go ahead, Tom.
I just wanted to butt in. Basically, I feel like the mistake from Russell, I think he described it as lack of concentration. And as from an amateur sim rating point of view, I can kind of understand how the accidents happened, if that makes sense. I kind of feel like when I date, I know I'm not a professional racing driver, but I'm just kind of thinking of how
pretend that you are.
Yeah. Basically, when you're doing the sim racing or the racing, sometimes when I start daydreaming or I'm following a faster car, you kind of follow the car in front like it's kind of an autopilot mode. You just kind of follow their line completely and you're completely in line with them. So when Norris kind of scrubbed his tyre just against that wall before Russell did, I feel like he's kind of in a day. Russell himself is in kind of a daydreamy mode, kind of out of consciousness. So then when he's kind of following Lando's line for every inch. So then when Lando scrubbed that wall, he's just banged it a lot harder and gone straight on while he's not been focusing, if that makes sense.
We know, Tom, whenever you're sim racing, you're just dreaming of doing laps of down the park.
Well, you kind of like, yeah, I kind of just like start daydreaming and then realize I'm still on the road. And I feel like that's what he's done, because you kind of just completely follow the car ahead. And I think he's done that. And then when Lando scrubbed the wall, he scrubbed the wall, but it's just a lot harder.
Yeah, I'm just actually watching that clip of Russell hitting the wall, and Norris did go incredibly close to it.
I think if, from some angles, there is some like little dust that comes off of the wall where like Lando does scrape it, like just like it's the smallest of inch, but you can kind of see a bit of dust.
But you can see that it does narrow out a wee bit as well as he's coming into it. Narrow out on that corner, it does peak out. So I don't know whether he was just following the edge of the line, because you've limited visibility. You might not even be able to see that line. You're just following the wall, and then next thing, the barrier, you can see the barrier, but you're going that fast and you're not really focusing on the edge of the wall. And then all of a sudden it peaks out that little bit more than you're expecting. And, you know, it's very easy to make that mistake. I've just watched it about six times, and you just see how he's coming alongside it. He's coming alongside it, and then the line sort of gets really close, and then the wall's just right there, you know. There's not much you really could have done.
Yeah. And Nick, here's us talking as if we could do any better if we were in that Mercedes.
Definitely not. Yeah. Like, I know I'm a cocky, you know, I can be cocky, but like, not even I could have avoided that sort of situation there. Like, you're that focused. Even in karting, you're just always trying to be up the rear end of the other person until they make a mistake, and then you capitalize on that. That's what he was doing. He was waiting for Norris to either break late or, you know, not take his turn as quick as he could have, and George, you know, maybe do a fast switchback type thing, if you know what I mean. But devastated for him at the same time, though.
Yeah, but I felt like something like that was going to happen in the race, or move on the four. It was,
if Lance Stroll had made it back into the race, he would have bended again.
We haven't even talked about Stroll.
That's all we need to say, really.
He kind of pushed too much, car bottoms out on curb, tries to create it, wall.
Destroys car, can't be fixed, job done.
Does worst spot qualifying lap ever, asked to leave Aston Martin F1 team.
Aston Martin continuing the trend of getting worse and worse in every race this year.
Well, No. Alonso is keeping the team alive. Stroll has just been consistently dog throughout the season. You know, even at the start when they had their opportunity, Stroll, I'm sitting in eighth. Where is my teammate? Second! Oh, cool.
Yeah. Right, let's talk some transfer news now.
Football?
Yes.
F1 football. F1
football. Bring back that game they play in Monaco every year.
Now bring back the single seater series where all the teams, Formula One teams, were like all sponsored by stadiums. Teams.
There was Tottenham. I think there was Ajax was one.
It was United, Liverpool, and Chelsea.
I think Roma was one as well. I think think that they used the same cars as the World Cup thing. I forgot the name of.
Is that A1 Grand Prix?
A1, yeah.
I'm just actually looking up football Formula One, because I remember that. Yeah, Super League Formula.
That's it.
Let's have a quick browse through. This is the usual time, the podcast, where things go a little bit off track. But let me see some of the drivers. The drivers who have also raced in F1, Carter Kane. There's a whole bit of Sebastian Bourdais. There's a few, to be fair. Let's get up an actual season.
They need done stuff by that point.
2011 season. You get 2010. So 2011. Actually, yeah. Let's go back 2010.
I'm just reading through the drivers to see if there was anyone here by chance that ever made it anywhere. Not a single name do I see.
Well, let's go back to 2008 when you had European teams like Rangers, Tottenham, Liverpool. Actually, Liverpool and Porto were the high tech junior team.
PSV Eindhoven, Olympiacos.
This is a game of
Sporting. As we got Liverpool, obviously.
Right. So that's the reserve drivers. There's a certain Jerome D'Ambrosio in there. The race at Donington Park.
Yeah, they did at Brands Hatch. They've had like one of the biggest crashes ever at Brands Hatch. Because when you go into the forest section, you go down that straight that goes down the hill and there's the bridge.
Yeah.
One of the cars like takes off and like hit the side of the bridge in it. And he was all right, but it's like it's probably one of the biggest crashes ever at Brands Hatch because it's just massive.
And just looking here, 2009, there was a driver, Scott Mansell, who driver 61 on YouTube.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, but his Wikipedia page, the second line says he is not related to British Formula One champion Nigel Mansell. Speaking of Nigel Mansell, I must actually look this up because I heard on the radio that he's auctioning off everything in his jersey collection. I visited there years ago.
Yeah, he posted it on Twitter.
Yeah, let's see what we can buy.
If he's selling his touring car, as you know, he doesn't own the touring car.
Okay, let's see some of the weirdest things. You can buy his paddock motorbike for between 5,000 and 10,000.
I'll take it for 5.
37 miscellaneous Formula One IndyCar baseball hats, £50 to £100. I am very much tempted. he's got a go kart going.
Drip.
$2,000 for a go kart with the red 5 on it.
Fair enough.
You can get half a Jackie Stewart helmet for £500. You can here we go. This is the fun stuff. A 1981 Belgian Grand Prix third place driver's first podium trophy. Must be his first then. Between £1,000 and £2,000.
A registration plate 5NM from $30,000 to $60,000. Sheesh.
There's some decent things on here, to be fair. What?
By the way, Ferrari, sorry, I'm going
poor sculptures.
I'm going back to Super League quickly. Big news from it. Tottenham won a trophy.
That's a good one. Oh, reserve driver. Tom, just go under 2009.
Are we selling trophies?
Yeah. Tom, go into 2009 Super League Formula season and scroll down to the reserve drivers because there's a very recognisable name in there.
Why is he getting rid of so much stuff?
No.
Okay.
You're telling me I can get a 1991 French Grand Prix first place trophy for $5,000? What?
Wait, is it? Oh, Jack Villeneuve.
Yeah.
Oh. He does do some weird stuff. Like, he disappears in random places. It's like he goes / teleport and then he's there.
I just found the coolest one of the lot.
What is it?
A petrol pump that's all stickered up in Renault L5. That is actually sick looking. It's on page 3 if you can see it. Oh, that's awesome.
There's a motorbike on page 4, Hank.
What do I search for this? Sorry.
Just type in Nigel Mansell auction.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ryan, go to page 4 because there's a very nice motorbike on there.
Page 4.
Is there any cars?
I don't know. Actually, speaking of which,
that's new though. That's new. That's gonna go for.
Oh, motor vehicles available.
Yeah.
Or have I just gone on the Zion just
looks and then tap on available lots.
Auction details, is that it?
Race suit. Oh,
available lots.
By race suits.
Aha!
There's so many pages, man. Nine pages.
Your steering wheel. Didn't that go on my sim?
Yeah, well, you should do one of them YouTube videos where you show off your like sim rig, yeah. And just go.
£5 wheel versus Nigel Mansell 1998 Ferrari steering wheel.
Yeah, we're claiming that video. If there's any sponsors,
oh, that's so cool. 2007 BMW Sauber Formula One suit with the Petronas on it. From 500 to 1,000. Oh, that'd be sick.
Okay, let's get back on track and finish off this conversation about transfer markets and do our predictions.
I'm putting down 500 on that. Oh, that'd be sick to have.
Right. Transfer news again.
Yeah.
Because we're going very off track. So obviously, after us predicting two podcasts ago that Hamilton, Russell and Stroll would all be, their contracts would be renewed, the day we uploaded the podcast, that was confirmed. Since then, Zhou Guanyu has been confirmed as an Alfa Romeo driver for next season. A little bit of a shock, because there was a lot of talk about Teo Pucheri maybe getting that seat, or Felipe Drugovich, who turned down an opportunity in both IndyCar and Formula E to try and pursue that opportunity, isn't getting it. Zhou's been confirmed, and Pucheri has been confirmed again as the reserve driver. But that leaves, still technically two seats open for next season. There's obviously the one at Williams and the one at AlphaTauri. And let's start with AlphaTauri and just get your thoughts on this one very briefly. Because AlphaTauri, as we know at the moment, are currently running Liam Lawson and Yuki Tsunoda in the absence of Daniel Ricciardo, who replaced Nick De Vries. Actually, there was this stat that, obviously, because one thing we didn't actually talk about is how Red Bull were both eliminated in Q2. In qualifying, but I hope other people posted online that it all goes back to Alex Albon being ruled out injured last year, where Nick De Vries got his seat, and then Nick De Vries then got the AlphaTauri seat, and then obviously Ricciardo came in to replace Nick De Vries, and then Liam Lawson's come in to replace Ricciardo, and Lawson was the driver who knocked Verstappen out of qualifying, which means it all's down to Alex Albon is caused us to finally got a bit of payback to Red Bull for the way they treated him. But back to the story, it looks like AlphaTauri are going to keep Ricciardo and Tsunoda for next season, which I feel a bit disappointed for Liam Lawson, because I feel like he's proven is worth. He's obviously scored points there at the weekend, and he's doing a really good job. And obviously, we didn't have enough time to really compare Ricciardo in that seat, because I think he'd done two races or one race and got injured or something like that. But Lawson looks like another year in the sidelines, although there is talk about him potentially going to Williams. A Lawson Albon lineup of Williams could be quite interesting. Tom, I'll start with you in this one. Do you think that's a smart move for AlphaTauri, keeping Tsunoda and Ricciardo, or do you think that I think in an ideal world, Lawson gets a seat of Williams, he's on the grid, and AlphaTauri keep Ricciardo or Tsunoda, or do you think they're just wasting an opportunity by keeping the likes of Ricciardo around, or even Tsunoda, and basically giving who their top young driver away to one of the rival teams?
What I think they should do is do what they do at Le Mans and just send it free cars, because it's a very hard choice, to be fair, because Tsunoda had a good start to the season, probably one of the better drivers on the grid, because he was getting some pretty decent results considering the machinery he had at the start of the season. And he completely destroyed Nick De Vries' whole career. So there's that. But Ricciardo we haven't seen really enough from him this season to really say if he should get the seat or if he shouldn't. I think the only argument against him is that he's quite a bit older and has had his chance at Formula One and kind of squandered the good opportunities he had. So he had a decent first race with 13th, but then Belgium didn't go that well, where he finished 19th. So I think with Ricciardo, you have to judge it on the remaining rounds of the season. But considering Lawson's third race, he's scored points and Ricciardo still hasn't. There's that. So I think you could put in a good argument for Lawson to get the seat over Ricciardo. But I feel like Tsunoda, I feel like he's done enough with the machinery he's had. I feel like, yes, Lawson's come in and may have kind of been a bit better than him through the three races he's been in. But I feel like Tsunoda has done enough this season to show that he's improved. I don't think he's necessarily proved he's good enough for the Red Bull seat yet, and I don't think he will go into that seat, but I feel with the machinery he's had, he's not done too bad. So what I'd do, looking, just kind of going through the results while I've been talking about that, I'd probably put Tsunoda and Lawson together instead of Daniel, because I feel like you've got to prioritise the future, and Daniel isn't necessarily proving at the moment he is the future of the A team, the Red Bull team.
I think everywhere I seem sort of being reported is that Ricciardo has got one of the seats next year, and it's a question of whether or not to replace Tsunoda, which I feel like is, I don't know. I think the big thing with the Tsunoda is obviously the Honda link and the Aston Martin link from 2026, and I think that could potentially play into it. There's been talk of maybe Tsunoda doing what Ricciardo was at Red Bull, basically being the third driver, which I feel like it's really a career ender. If you're doing that, you become a reserve driver for an F1 team.
But you have Ocon and Ocon for a bit, Mercedes. And they've both come back really fighting. But yeah, I know what you mean.
They've come back fighting, but they've come back at teams much further down the grid than what they probably were hoping for.
But I would say they're probably, if you do need a quick driver probably in one of those top teams, I'd put those two as a driver that you want in.
Yeah, I agree with that one. Ryan, just your thoughts on that. Who do you think AlphaTauri should choose for next year, just very quickly?
Very quickly? Honestly, I would try and squeeze Liam Lawson in there, because he's been solid for them so far. For a guy who's just jumped into an F1 car for the first time in a week, and did he even get testing in the car? I'm not even too sure. But he's just jumped in and he's done the job. He's proven that he deserves a chance, at least a chance anyway, for next season. With Ricciardo, it's just because of the Red Bull agreement that he's in there. But then you have Honda agreement as well with Tsunoda. But Tsunoda can be very unpredictable at times, so nobody knows what's going to happen realistically. But you either go with experience and a new driver and hope for the best, or you go with angry experienced driver with a junior rookie, or you just go with crazy Tsunoda with funny Daniel Ricciardo, who them two seem to get along with. So the PC might be able to keep the peace with Yuki a wee bit better, but I don't know. I have no idea. But either way, between the three of them, it's always a decent enough lineup. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, to be fair, we don't know what the AlphaTauri team will be named next year. There's reports that it could be Hugo Boss Bulls Racing, or it could even be Adidas. I've seen that rumor today. So maybe they might have a hand to play in it. But before we move on to predictions, Tom, very quickly, Mick Schumacher is linked to the Alpine WEC seat as a job share with being Mercedes reserve. Do you think that's a good move for him? Do you think this is possibly him just saying sort of goodbye to an F1 career and looking to pursue a career in in World Endurance, and it wouldn't be the first time the Schumacher name has disgraced the world of endurance racing either.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere it's kind of the backup plan if F1 doesn't work out, which I think at this point it could be a possibility F1's not going to work out, because I feel like he's gone a bit down the Stoffel Van Dorn route. So I can see him just kind of being an endurance racing driver, which is a bit of a shame, because he had a lot of there was a lot of hype. There was a lot of hype around him when he came into Formula One. He won Formula Two. He had a very dominant, I think it was European Formula Three.
He was up against Dan Tuckdom, to be fair.
Yeah, but he went on a very dominant run in that championship. I think he won quite a few races in a row, from what I remember. So he was coming in as one of these kind of generational talents, I think. And he just kind of fell flat, which, I don't think really many people expected. I think he's always been a driver that he takes two seasons to warm up. So he comes in as kind of a season where he kind of learns the series and then gets going. But he didn't really have that in Formula One. He had a year where he had, yes, a rubbish car, but he should have learned in that year. And then when he came in, was it 2020? Yeah, 2022, his performances never really showed the it factor. So I feel like this is probably him accepting that the F1 opportunity might not come when you've got other more talented drivers that can prove themselves in Formula One, like Felipe Drugovich and Vesti or Porcher in the wings waiting for an F1 seat.
Yeah, and that point you made about the 2 year fine, of course, he had two seasons in F1, but there's the rules change between the two seasons, so I think if he was given another season, things might be a little bit different. But let's move on to our predictions now, and I mean, shocking again for me and Ryan in particular.
Dreadful.
Team Apex got 2 points, so well done. We all went for the safe option. We picked Verstappen, me and Team Apex went for Verstappen pole, Ryan went for Leclerc, and for the race win, Ryan, Team Apex went for Verstappen, I went for Perez, and obviously Sainz done the double there. So Ryan, you were actually closest, to be fair, going for Leclerc, just the wrong number in the car.
I did say Ferrari would take it.
Yeah, and then on the podium, I obviously had Verstappen and Piastri, with Perez winning, that didn't happen, and then Ryan, you had Perez and Leclerc, and Team Apex at Hamilton and Sainz, so well done, Tom, for that. Fastest lap was Lewis Hamilton. I went for Piastri, Ryan for Verstappen, and Team Apex Norris. And then, surprise, I went for Ocon to finish in the top 8. That didn't happen. Ryan, you went for Hamilton in Q2. It was the other world champion.
Yep.
One of two other world champions in the grid that was out. And Team Apex went for Sainz, putting a picture on Instagram beside a building, which didn't happen, probably because he had too many pictures of him celebrating to go up instead. Which leaves the scores with a couple of rounds to go. Myself on 27 points, Ryan on 34 points, and in the lead on 36 is Team Apex. Although, Ryan, I think we should form a pact here and say that because there's three of them, their points get divided by three to help us.
No.
Okay. Yeah, you've done the most of them, so I feel
hard.
I feel like a good 75% of the predictions have been done by you, Tom, so yeah, we'll give you that one. Right, it's the Lenovo Japanese Grand Prix, the 6 a.m. start that we're all looking forward to.
Oh, it's a good track, at least. Yeah, like, it's not like we're watching Russia or
Don't mention Russia to Ryan. I was going to say Ryan likes Russia, but that Ryan likes the Russian Grand Prix circuit, I should say.
Yeah, that context is everything. Like at least you're getting up for an exciting Grand Prix. It's not like you're gonna watch like the car park that is Abu Dhabi or something.
Yeah, right. Pole position, Tom. As leading the championship, I will let you have first pick on this one.
Carlos Sainz.
Okay.
It's not gonna happen now, but I don't know.
Laugh now, cry later.
Yeah.
you can afford to make a couple of bolder predictions, Ryan.
Yeah.
I think we go back to cut and paste. You know, I think it's Max.
Yeah. I'm thinking the same.
You know, Ferrari's definitely gonna be up there, but I think Max is gonna pip it.
Yeah, and I'm going for a Verstappen race one as well. Ryan, your race winner.
Race winner, Max.
Okay.
I'm gonna fall into the trap again. Oh no.
Yeah, Tom.
We'll go Sainz again. I've got an idea in my head.
Okay. Podium. Tom, go for it.
Okay, I think Leclerc and Verstappen.
Okay, I mean, that is a safe option, to be fair, because if Verstappen still wins, you still get a point. Yeah,
well, I feel like Ferrari have a car that's good on a fast-paced circuit. I know, and even though it's quite aero-orientated, Suzuka is a very quick circuit, so I feel like the Ferrari engine will be suited well to that.
I'm going for Norris and Russell as my podium sitters. Ryan?
I'm going to throw Norris and Sainz.
Interesting. Okay. Right, fastest lap. I'm going to go back to my old faithful of Norris. Tom?
We'll go for, let's shake it up, let's go Hamilton.
Okay. And Ryan?
Max.
good save young, there. Man. Yeah, good save. Right, Ryan, it's time for you to shine. Let's play the jingle.
It's time for Ryan's random number generator.
Yeah. And take it away.
Yeah, sounds good. Okay, time to go. Who's up first?
Me, we'll just do the usual order.
And our number... Oh, no, my numbers have reset, so it goes up to 81. Okay, so up to 81. Clickety one, they clickety twice, clickety three times, we get 77. Valtteri Bottas.
Okay. Bottas. What's his recent... form being like
recently, I don't know. He's been on the lower side of the field, let's say the least.
I mean, I was gonna say score point, he's only been in the point three times this year. Would Bottas being in the points be a bold enough prediction?
Let me see where he placed in Singapore.
Retired.
I forgot.
I'll go top nine. That will be his second best result of the season.
Yeah, that's fair. Watch now, okay. He finishes in like P3.
Yeah.
An Alpha in also, P3.
What was it? The Bottas' Q3 streak survives because Red Bull were out in Q2 this year. Or in, what do you call it, in Singapore, because no Red Bull car was in Q3. They were one race behind Bottas, a streak of like 102 races in Q3 or something like that. The only Red Bull car in Q3, in fact, was Liam Lawson.
Yeah, it's fun. Put Max out too.
Yeah.
Has everyone said destroyed any chances of getting to the big team?
Yep.
Just Ryan, me and people out. Is this for me
your
now?
Turn. Yes.
Okay. Clicky once, clicky twice, clicky three times. Number four, that is the Lando king Norris. Himself.
You have predicted Norris on the podium, so you can spin again if you like.
Bold prediction then. Norris gets pole position. is that bold just, enough for you?
I mean, is that just sacrificing the Verstappen point?
So you're saying I can't get, it's one or the other.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, you can.
So I have two chances at getting the pole position right.
Okay.
Loopholes, my friend. Mainly because I couldn't think of anything else.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not Final saying time. He takes a picture of his foot or anything like as you would or Tom would. Okay.
Final spin off the episode.
Thomas Toseland, are you ready?
Yeah.
Clicky once, clicky twice, clicky three times. And we have number 12. So the closest is number 11. Sergio Perez.
Doesn't score points?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, we'll go with that then.
Aw, man. I don't know what you were about to type there, but it looked German.
Yes.
Class.
Okay. So that is going to bring an end to this podcast. I must say, I was driving into work this morning and they were playing the tune on the radio and it put me in such a good mood. It's just exactly what I needed. Available now on Spotify. The Chain, Brian's version.
A cappella.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll release an Apex charity single.
Gee whiz, Tommy.
Yeah. Right. Tom, any final thoughts before I end this podcast? And of course, your famous movie review that everyone loves.
I've kind of stole it from Ryan. It's all Ryan's movie review. I'm playing Starfield. That's good. Really good. The Bethesda game. That you're in space and stuff, and you've got to find out what this thing is. And at the moment I'm doing this side mission where I'm like this like business crony where I have to go and like sabotage other businesses as like a spy for this big corporation.
Elon Musk.
Yes.
Cool.
But yeah, no, it's very good. Yeah, very good game. I've been enjoying it.
On the topic of games and EA Sports being linked to the whole Formula One thing. EA FC 24, is it?
Yeah, yes.
But then you've just reminded me, we've got Forza Motorsports at the end of the month and EA WRC Rally or whatever it's called, the EA WRC game that's coming out in November or October, I can't remember. So I'm really looking forward to that.
I wouldn't be pal, rallying. Don't worry. Engine upgrades, you need to spend $5.99.
No!
I think the big news is
you that... need rally points to purchase packs to get new car decals.
No! Why do you keep doing this to me, EA?
The big news is on Friday, there's a new Spy Kids movie coming out.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. I've just looked up movies coming out this week.
Instead of, I should channel my inner Austin Powers. Oh yeah, baby.
Okay. Ryan, final thoughts before I end this, before we get completely out of control.
Why is the sky blue?
Well, it's actually black at the moment.
What?
It's the recording.
No, it's more of like a darkish silvery bluey grey. Yeah.
You have to remember we're in England, so we're an hour like in terms of the way sun goes like an hour ahead.
It's about half an hour realistically, which is why time zones don't actually make sense, because like most of Europe is like only an hour ahead of us, even though they're like split out quite massively.
So yeah, fun fact of the day.
Yeah,
that's not even a fun fact.
Also, fun fact that I realized yesterday, that Frank Sinatra was meant to play the main character in Die Hard.
Damn.
Yeah.
Why is it, what, the mean character in Die Hard?
There's the one that Bruce Willis plays.
Damn, son.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. So random. Right. Let's end out this podcast. Ryan, Tom, thank you for joining me. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you haven't already checked out the YouTube channel, there is a video where Tom interviewed Johnny Adam, who is going for another, his fifth British GT Championship win. He's currently leading the championship, and he's up against Dan Harper, who we interviewed, me and Ryan interviewed in the channel way back 2020 when we started. It was fairly early on, so it's pretty cool to have both of them going for the British GT title within the next month. But yeah, once again, Ryan, Tom, thanks for joining me. Thanks everyone for listening, and we hope you can join us for the next one in Japan. Goodbye.